Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I'm here today for Lee Drury, who died last year. This was his case, and he was a fine advocate and a friend, and I'm here to argue his case.
Appreciate your taking over for us.
Juveniles are different. Their brains are undeveloped. Science now confirms what all of us knew, and that was kids took a while to grow up. We now know that the frontal part of the brain controls judgment, and it is slow to develop. Science has taught us that. The law is now catching up, and the law is now recognizing that we as a society should treat the juveniles differently.
And that's all been addressed for our purposes in the Angel case, hasn't it?
It was addressed back in 2010, I believe, in the Angel case. There's been a lot happening since Angel that makes Angel maybe not good law.
Isn't it still binding on us? If it's not good law, isn't that something that the Supreme Court will have to...
Well, I believe that it's incumbent upon each of us to look at what the Supreme Court of the United States says, and if the Supreme Court of the United States says, Virginia, you got bad law, the judge, whether he's in the in the trial court or on whatever level, can look to the Supreme Court and say, you said this is bad law, and maybe Virginia hasn't had the chance or the opportunity in the Supreme Court to correct it, and we should start correcting it at our first opportunity.
But wouldn't we also have to deal with the very recent Supreme Court case of Jones 2 as far as doing ultimately what you want us to do here? So not just Angel, but Jones 2 as well.
Well, Jones 2 was a split decision, number one, but number two, it was maybe a dodge. Jones 2 said that procedurally this was not a direct appeal, it was not a habeas, it was a motion, and Jones 2 kind of dodged the issue. So I would submit that a careful reading of Jones 2 shows that the Supreme Court did not fully address the issue that is here directly on this appeal.
But didn't, in Jones 2, weren't they pretty clear that if a juvenile's life sentence could be suspended, even if it weren't, that is satisfactory or constitutional under Miller versus Alabama and Montgomery and all of those recent Supreme Court cases, Supreme Court of the United States cases that you cited to us?
You get to a very interesting legal issue that my worthy colleague here has set forth for Your Honor, and that is Montgomery says differently. But as my colleague points out, Montgomery didn't hold differently. Montgomery clearly says that even a discretionary life sentence runs afoul of treating juveniles differently, and that giving them a life sentence without possibility of parole is improper, except in the rarest cases. Now, Montgomery was a mandatory sentence, and so... that's why counsel properly points out that it was different. Now, there's a recent case came down in June, the Malvo case, which maybe is the most famous murder defendant in this state, certainly in my lifetime, but maybe in our history. We all recognize that name as it terrorized our country. And the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals has recently said that Malvo is entitled to new sentencing hearings in his case in Virginia on these cases. So I would submit that Malvo, also this case, was given a new sentencing hearing there, are examples that...
And got it.
And got it, right. So if that was a correct... ruling, then the question is not are we entitled to a fair sentencing, did we get it? And so my argument here is, did we get it? when this went back, and not were we entitled to it because somebody else has already decided, the federal judge decided that we were entitled to that. I would submit to the court that counsel also makes another good point. It is our job to determine what the law is. But what the law is what the law is becoming. And what the law is becoming in juveniles is changing rapidly. For an old lawyer such as myself, it seems rapid. In 2005, they said you can't put a juvenile to death. Then that was quickly followed by Graham, which says you can't give a person a mandatory life without possibility of parole. It's then followed with Miller. It's then followed with Montgomery and making it retroactive. It's then followed with Malvo. So we're rapidly seeing it changing.
But hasn't our Supreme Court addressed that in Angel and Johnson and Jones too? And we're kind of in a position where we don't get to just say...
Let me address that directly if I could. I'm also old enough to remember when we had parole, and parole existed, and it came out, our legislator said, we are abolishing parole. And every time I go to a jury trial now, the judge tells the jury, we no longer have parole in Virginia. And so the public and all us lawyers believed there was no parole until this case came down and says, oh, but we do have parole. We have geriatric parole. But is that the parole that the Constitution is talking about? Montgomery clearly came down and said, we have a substantive change in constitutional law that juveniles are different.
And the majority in Jones says that it is that. I mean, I recognize there's a dissent, but we're bound by the majority opinion in the Supreme Court case.
I would ask the court to examine it in light of all of these changing cases, and that Jones too didn't specifically address that. I agree that to some extent Johnson did. The Graham court said that a juvenile must be given some meaningful opportunity to obtain release based on demonstrated maturity and rehabilitation. Now, that doesn't talk at all about geriatric release. That does not sound like the same thing to me. On page 82 in the Graham case, it says there must be a realistic opportunity for the juvenile. I mean, we're looking at this as saying that we can't lock kids up and say, maybe when you get old, you're going to get geriatric release. There has to be a realistic opportunity. I'm betting there's going to be another vote on the Supreme Court of the United States that says stupid things you do when you're 17 years old doesn't mean that you can't mature and become a reasonable, credible individual. And it is that understanding that we as parents see our foolish young children grow into. But I recognize, Your Honor, that each of us are subject to looking to what someone in a higher place has said is the law. But the geriatric parole system isn't, it is some type of a safety valve up there, but it is not what the Constitution is talking about of being a realistic opportunity to prove
your
rehabilitation.
You have geriatric parole, but you also have the possibility that in any life sentence, at least in the situation we're dealing with here, it could be suspended. It doesn't have to be, but portions of it could be. And then here, he actually does suspend a portion of it. Now, I know your argument is he puts it at 91 years, and suspends the rest. But given the combination of those factors, why is Virginia's system here unconstitutional?
Well, because we weren't even thinking about this rule when we enacted this law, and to some degree we have shoehorned a shoe in that didn't fit and tried to say, okay, it kind of fits. We have given reasonable opportunity, but we don't. And the geriatric parole system in Virginia is not it's a two-step process. And the Fourth Circuit kind of ripped it anew in another case, saying this isn't what this means, and I believe that given proper air to examine this, courts such as yourself or the Supreme Court or the Supreme Court will say this isn't what we're talking about here. But you first file a petition, and a majority vote of the board doesn't even have to give you a hearing. They don't even have to state a reason. They say, we're not going to give you a hearing. We don't even look at it. They don't tell you why. And it is only if a majority vote says you get a hearing that you get a hearing to even prove your meaningful opportunity for rehabilitation. And that is not substantively sufficient. And it is at the nub of all of this. And you raise another good issue, and that is 91 years the same as a life sentence? If it's 150 years, that's not a life sentence. I agree with that. And neither is 91 plus 8 of 99 years. But if he's 17 years old when he gets a sentence of 91 years and he's got to serve it after he serves an 8-year sentence, that's a life sentence. And I meant to Google to see if anybody had ever gotten out of the penitentiary at 91 years or at 99, at 108. Maybe it's happened, but I would submit that it is an equivalent sentence, and it does not go to the heart of what society is now recognizing, that juveniles are different, and that we can't lock up a kid for his whole life or his realistically whole life without giving him some opportunity to re-examine this, because we as judges and prosecutors, we can't be smart enough, we can't be wise enough to see how this person is going to develop. And to make that decision at the front end is wrong. And it is society looking at that and saying, we're better than this. And we're not going to lock our kids up forever without giving them an opportunity to prove how bright they are. There's a wonderful sociological example in Maryland where Maryland had a rule that said, ladies and gentlemen, you're the founders of the law in this case. That was a jury instruction that was given in Maryland up through the 70s, and it was declared unconstitutional in the 80s, and then it was given retroactive effect in about 2014. And all of a sudden they had to turn loose or retry something like 400 people that were serving life sentences in Maryland. And these people at that point had served sentences of 40 years or so. So a very smart public defender in Baltimore went to the prosecutor and said, I got a deal for you. Every one of my clients will plead guilty. You'll give them a life sentence, but you're going to suspend it on the condition they're on probation for the rest of their life. And so then he hired social workers to help these people find jobs and reacclimate them into their communities and have them work. And do you know how many people have reoffended? Last time I looked, none. So, I mean, it's just a wonderful example of where young people who committed horrible crimes, when they are a teenager or early 20s, spend 40, 50 years in prison and come out and become okay citizens.
In your rebuttal, if you could, it's up.
We can't give up on our kids. We can't give up as a society. And this is that recognition. I recognize that we're all bound by stare decisis, but the law is changing. And it is changed by thoughtful people such as yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Mr. Murphy?
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm pleased to court Gene Murphy for the Commonwealth. Of course, this is all very interesting, but this court is entirely bound by Virginia Supreme Court rulings. Angel, for instance, was reaffirmed in Johnson in 2016 after Miller and Montgomery. So, and there were no dissent in that case. Justice, now Judge Millett, concurred. But Angel is therefore binding in every Virginia case, according to the Virginia Supreme Court. Now, with respect to what Jones 2 was, it certainly wasn't a dodge. Justice Kelsey does not dodge issues. And I know because I was on Jones, and the Commonwealth did argue that the defendant should prevail. And Judge Kelsey was having none of that, and he convinced three other justices to go with him, and we are now bound by the decision in Jones, that in discretionary parole, which we have in Virginia, which they have ruled in both of the Jones cases, it is discretionary and is therefore not controlled by Miller and Montgomery, that there is sufficient opportunity to present mitigating evidence, as in this case, of course, we did have the evidence with respect to the defendant's youth and what the characteristics of youth that was before the court. But the main problem here for the defendant is that Graham, of course, is controlled by Angel. And in any Graham case, if parole is available, as it is, according to the Virginia Supreme Court, then there is no claim. It is not a Miller. It is not life without parole. Neither for the robbery nor for the capital murder was Mr. Ross sentenced to life without parole. Now, interestingly, Malvo is directly contrary to Jones. We are on petition for cert in that case. The reply from the defendant is due on October 19th. Therefore, we expect a decision on whether they will grant cert by the end of the year. If they don't grant cert, then we have a split between the Fourth Circuit and Virginia Supreme Court, which means that if you're in federal court, you would prevail. If you're in state court, you won't. I mean, it's just one of the reasons we would like them to take up Malvo and decide the issue, because they are directly contrary, and we will be confessing error in many of the Miller-Montgomery cases if cert is not granted. But in Virginia, the state judges will be required to adhere to the opinion in Jones. But at this point, there is no state authority. The Supreme Court has not said that Virginia's system is wrong. It has just never addressed that issue. We did, cert was denied in Jones too, so that they didn't take it, the issue then. If they take it in Malvo, they may get there. But at this point, there is no authority whatsoever in Virginia for the position adopted by Mr. Ross. And unless there are questions from the... And of course, the resentencing in this case occurred before Jones was handed. The order directing resentencing came down before Jones, so Jones has in fact changed whatever might have been the law before then. So the Jones 2 clearly indicates that there was nothing wrong with any of the sentencing here. Well, unless the court has any questions, I request that the decision be affirmed.
So you're dealing here with the robbery and the murder.
Yes, sir.
Can you elaborate a little further on when you have a life sentence, it may be suspended for the robbery. Can it be suspended for the murder?
Yes. It in fact, was suspended in this case, and the Jones Court said that it could be suspended in any case. There are some Virginia life sentences for a third-time child rape, a couple of others, that are truly mandatory. They are made mandatory. The capital murder sentence is not mandatory. It can be.
It just depends on which capital murder statute you're dealing with.
No, any conviction for capital murder is suspendable. There are the third-time child rape and a few others within the statute itself, and indicates that the life sentence will be a mandatory minimum sentence. That there's no such language with respect to the capital murder sentence. And that's why, in this case, the Virginia Supreme Court found that the court had power to suspend the life sentence. And as a consequence, it is a discretionary sentence, not mandatory, as would be the third-time child rape, which Virginia, because they had done that in one case, the theory is that they could have done it for a capital murder sentence too, but did not. Even in Jones 1, they arrived at that conclusion. Jones 2, they reaffirmed that and said, no, mandatory, we do not have mandatory life without parole for capital murder. Any further questions, Jones?
Hearing none.
Thank you.
We thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Thank you.
Mr. Berger, we won't start your rebuttal time until you have the opportunity. You take your time, sir.
The one point that I think I missed to address, and that is that the court has said that it should be the rare juvenile that gets sentenced to a life sentence there, and it is one that is permanently incorrigible. And I think that particularly applies to the robbery sentence here. This judge did not make a finding either at the initial stage or on the remand that this child, that this man, is permanently incorrigible. And it is without that finding that the whole process...
Is there any requirement for a written finding to that effect? Doesn't the sentencing hearing where you get all sorts of things put in, mitigating... aspects as well as perhaps aggravating? Why wouldn't a sentencing hearing in a matter like this essentially take care of that?
Well, because it is now, I believe, a substantive constitutional issue, and it requires a separate type of hearing in which the court addresses that, and I believe the court should be required to make a finding that I make a finding that he is permanently incorrigible and therefore that a sentence of life is appropriate. And without that finding, we're treating the juvenile like we treat an adult. Thank you.
Thank you. We will step.